Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Through expert interviews, we help you navigate the challenges of leading, hiring, growing, and nurturing your tech team to deliver the value your customers demand. Brought to you by AgilityFeet.com, experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally.
The reason you track cycle time is to address all the problems, Debbie, that you were talking about, is cycle time is really measuring that time to feedback. You know, we don't know whether something is valuable. We don't know if something was useful until we actually place it in the hands of our customers and our customers can tell us.
Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, the podcast for leaders of growing software engineering teams. I'm Aaron Syme, here with my co-host, David Alfaro. How are you doing today, David?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Enjoying Costa Rica. We are in the rainy season. Well, I mean, as you remember, we have two seasons in Costa Rica: the rainy season and the more rainy season. So we are in the more rainy season right now. Yeah, it's wet, very wet.
Yeah, it is similar here in Virginia. As I'm recording with you today, we have the rainy season, which is like Thursday through Sunday, and the sunny season, which is Monday through Wednesday this time of year. We call that spring, and it's all over the place. But
lovely.
Anyways, speaking of all over the place, we had a great wide-ranging conversation today in this episode. We spoke with Dan Vacante, who's going to talk with us about predictability and Kanban. David, what did you think about this conversation with Dan? What's something you want our listeners to look out for?
Oh, well, I enjoyed the refresher on Kanban. It is so nice to see Kanban all over again, because Kanban has a particular focus on systemic view of the process. But let me rephrase that. The most important thing about Kanban is value delivery and what are the metrics that actually matter to be sure that you are delivering value, and how you can improve those metrics so you can deliver value fast. And this episode was fantastic. How about that? Yeah, I really liked that very much.
Yeah, me too. I also really liked how comfortable Dan is with the idea of mixing elements of Scrum and Kanban. And, you know, he talked about, like, how do you even do Kanban without incorporating some aspects of Scrum techniques, like stand-ups and the way they do stakeholder management? And how can you even do Scrum without thinking about those flow aspects of Kanban and staying focused on the value delivery, like you were just saying, that Kanban's so good at? So, yeah, I thought this was a really interesting conversation. I'm sure listeners will enjoy it. So let's get to our interview with Dan Vacante. Daniel Vacante is an expert Kanban trainer and an old friend of mine who I'm very happy to have as a guest today. Dan is author of Actionable Agile Metrics for Predictability, co-author of The Kanban Guide, co-founder of ProKanban.org. Among just a few of his many accomplishments, he's also a bourbon aficionado and co-host of the Drunk Agile podcast, which you can find on YouTube. Thanks so much for joining us today, Dan.
Well, no, thank you very much for the invitation. You know, it's you know, since we talk so often, it was just a natural thing for me to come back. No, but it's great to reconnect with you, Aaron, and just so happy to be here.
Yeah, no, it is great to reconnect with you. And we were joking before that I have a habit of sending you an email every few years that says, "Hey, we haven't talked in a few years. Let's not wait so long." And then I wait a few years to send you an email again. So yeah, hopefully we can have you as a recurring guest in the Scaling Tech podcast, so that I have a way to remedy my bad behavior. But thank you so much for being here anyways.
Yeah, no, it takes two to tango. So I am just as guilty. Yeah.
Well, I don't have to regret that, because this is the first time I meet you. So I will have the opportunity to regret that in the future.
That's right. Exactly.
Thank you for that opportunity.
David's going to keep us in line from here on out. speaking of keeping us in line, I know in the Drunk Agile podcast, you often start with a little drink. So we will maybe follow that same tradition here today with you, Dan. So let's start with you, since you've done this before. What are you drinking today?
I I chose a Glendronach. Glendronach is one of my favorites. You know, when we talk about whiskey, this is a 23-year-old bourbon cask, which is a bit rare for Glendronach because they switched over to all sherry casks in the past, I don't know, decade or so. But 23-year-old bourbon cask, 53.9%. So it's if anybody out there has not tried a Glendronach, I highly, highly recommend it. So that's what I've got.
Very nice. Very nice. And I have a 15-year-old Knob Creek here that I'm going to have today. The Knob Creek is actually one of the first bourbons I started to enjoy and often found it in the lesser versions of Knob Creek in the dive bars that I was going to at the time. And it was the top rail drink then. But this is now a top rail version of Knob Creek by that standard anyways. So I'm going to pour a little bit of this. How about you, David?
Well, I have the thing that you gave me for my birthday. It is Blanton's.
Absolutely. And
I mean, I'm new at this whiskey thing. And the way that I have to describe this is that, I don't know, it tastes like the air in the sunset in late summer. I don't know. Is that
yeah. You could have gone with
that. That works for me. Yeah.
Where that was going to end.
I don't know. Yeah, I feel like that when I drink it. I feel like that. So thank you for the gift.
I mean, if you're just starting out and Aaron started you on a Blanton's, he's kind of ruined you because
that's right.
It's going to be really, really hard for you to drink other stuff once you start with Blanton's.
Yeah, well, some of my friends who got me started me that way as well, and I am a bit ruined, but. Regardless, cheers.
Cheers, everybody. Cheers.
So, Dan, let's start with a little bit about your story. Definitely well-known expert in the Kanban field. You were really there at the very beginning of Kanban. Can you maybe start to tell us a little, our listeners, a little bit about your background?
I was brought into a company called Corbis back in, it was like 2006, 2007. There was a maintenance and support team there that had been playing around with certain practices. They were actually calling it Kanban at the time, but it seemed to be working for them. And so I was brought in. Corbis was about to kick off several big initiatives. You know, as you do as a company, you know, it's important that you kick off like 20 big initiatives all at the same time.
Yeah, all mission critical, you know, preferably, right?
Yeah, exactly. that's always going to work. So I was brought in to help to scale the practices that had been working on this maintenance team to scale that to the rest of the engineering, you know, organization as we tried to take on these bigger initiatives. And the practices that we used and all the things that we learned kind of evolved and came to be known as what we know now as Kanban. So that was, and I've really just kind of been involved with the whole Kanban movement ever since. You know, a few years after that, I kind of gravitated a little bit more to the metrics side of things, because we can maybe talk about how screwed up metrics are on in Agile at large. The wonderful insight that flow metrics give you in terms of helping, you know, not only making better decisions but spotting opportunities for improvement, and that's really what I've been focused on from a Kanban perspective. You know, ever since.
Now, I should back up just a touch and say, we assume most of our listeners to this are already familiar, generally speaking, with Kanban and Agile and Scrum techniques. But why don't you give us, and this is a timed test, your 30-second explanation of what Kanban is for anyone who may be new to it.
I don't know if it'll be 30 seconds, but I think I can get it under a minute.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
So the whole idea behind Kanban is if you have a job, if you're working somewhere, chances are the reason for your job is that you are there to deliver value for somebody, right? You have a customer somewhere, you have a stakeholder somewhere, you have somebody somewhere that you are delivering value for, either directly or indirectly, right? That's probably why you have a job. One of the best ways the theory goes to optimize the delivery of that value for your customers is to focus on this thing called flow. And maybe we should talk about what flow is a little bit later. But one of the best ways to optimize delivery of customer value is to optimize for flow, you know, in your process. And really, that's all Kanban is. Kanban is a strategy to optimize flow, right? And thereby, hopefully, optimize the delivery of customer value. So I don't know how I did there in terms of the time. Yeah, but
I think a little under a minute. But okay. Great explanation nonetheless. And I think flow definitely is something that we want to talk about today, because I think for me anyways, one of the things that I find most interesting about Kanban is the predictability of it. And so that's something I certainly wanted to drill in a little bit more with you today. What makes Kanban so predictable, or as I know you also say, actionable?
This one's definitely not going to be a lesson.
I won't time you on this one.
I guess Kanban in and of itself is not predictable, but certainly hopefully some of the practices that you bring to bear, you know, on your workflow will aid in predictability. It's just this idea of, you know, being there are certain things that we do when we're working to shoot ourselves in the foot. We just talked about one of them, you know, like starting 50 things all at the same time, right? If you want to not be successful, you know, if you want to essentially initiate a denial of service attack on yourself, that's one way to do it. And so that's really why, you know, where flow comes into play is, you know, spotting those areas where, you know, that lead to, you know, inefficiencies, ineffectiveness in terms of how you are getting work done, in terms of your ability to deliver value for your customers. Because that's really all that flow is, you know, how are we actually taking an idea and turning it into something tangible for our customer? And how is that moving through our workflow? Flow just gives you some hints and insights in terms of some things that are probably you should be doing and some things that you should not be doing in order to aid that predictability. I waved my hands a lot there. I'm guessing we're going to do a deeper dive on some of these things here in just a second.
That's okay. No worries. For our listeners, they'll just hear your hands waving through.
Okay.
So it's good.
Good.
Maybe you don't know this, but one of the reasons that I connect with Aaron is that we were at a stage in life where we were tired of being Scrum consultants. So we were really tired because it was very frustrating in many senses. And we are talking about 10 years ago. And things are different now. And I remember at that time, Scrum was way more popular than Kanban, way more popular. I was really interested in Kanban. And in fact, Herring taught me more about Kanban. So that was fantastic. And when that knowledge happened, I came to realize that the way I could visualize Kanban was like this. If I could find a way to differentiate Scrum with Kanban, it's about the priority. I think that from my perspective, I want your opinion. How about this interpretation is that Kanban is more about improving throughput and Scrum. I think the core, I don't know, value of Scrum is collaboration. And part of what I say this is when I was in a team that was doing Scrum and then we will transition to Kanban, then I will discover that people were missing the collaboration part. Now I know that it is not exclusive. It doesn't have to be that way. But it helped me to realize that for me, that was a good way to compare both. I mean, in terms of the core values, what do you think about that?
For the most part, I agree. I mean, yes, I believe that Scrum is, and rightfully so, Scrum is focused on the team. It is impossible to do Scrum without a sense of team. And I think any Scrum person that you would talk to would agree with that. And that, rightly or wrongly, that's the thing about Kanban is, you know, Kanban really only cares about the workflow. It doesn't necessarily care whether you have a team or you don't have a team or whatever. You know, you're right. It doesn't really care about that. But this is why I say, in my mind, it's imperative probably to do both, or, you know, at least explore how you might do. I don't know how you do Scrum without Kanban. And to be honest with you, if you're doing Kanban, I don't know how you do Kanban without things like, let's make sure we're checking everything, checking in every day to make sure we're progressing toward a goal. Let's make sure our team is getting together and talking about how we can improve. Let's make sure that we're meeting with our stakeholders regularly to review, our progress toward maybe, you know, wider product goals and things. And it starts sounding a lot like Scrum at that point, you know, so that, that's what I'm saying. I think the lines really, really start to blur once you start thinking about it that way.
That makes sense.
I wish more people would think about it that way.
Yeah. Right. Well, I clearly remember that at some point with some team, we were doing Scrum, and then we introduced the work in progress concept and the idea that we don't allow bottlenecks, and we constantly are working on the bottlenecks, respecting the work in progress limit. And that was a game change. And it still Scrum, right? I mean, still Scrum, but I mean, that concept alone was so powerful, so powerful.
Yeah, I think that's a key aspect about it for me as well. The Scrum has the time boundaries of the sprint, right? And I think that's the biggest decision you have to make if you're going to try and blend them, is do you keep that or not? Because I think if you keep that, you're not doing Kanban. You can follow some other Kanban practices, but you're now not measuring a proper cycle time, right? The thing I love about Kanban is just the visualizing of the workflow. And I think, as David said, you know, back when he and I were Agile consultants ourselves in the past, for me anyways, one of the things that certainly frustrated me about trying to train teams on Scrum was that they were so focused on getting the rituals correct of Scrum, mm-hmm. and were they doing that correctly by the book or not, and could they modify it this way or not, that they were kind of missing the point of, but are you delivering good value? And are you delivering it in a predictable, reliable, healthy way? And Scrum can kind of mask that if you're getting too focused on the rituals of it. Whereas Kanban, it's start where you are, right? Just start visualizing the process as you have it now. See those bottlenecks, start tackling them one by one, improving that process. And I think that's so important. It's harder to hide things in Kanban, I think.
It is, but I mean, I think Kanban still suffers from that same lack of rigor. It can, because people think, oh, as long as we're visualizing our work, we're doing Kanban. Well, I mean, there's so much more to it than just, oh, let's put some post-it notes up on a whiteboard. Well, that was pre-pandemic. Post-pandemic, it's like, oh, let's make sure that we have our board set up in Jira, right? As long as we have that, then we're doing Kanban, which is not true. To me, that's similar to like saying, oh, we're doing a stand-up every day or doing a daily Scrum every day, so we're doing Scrum,
right?
You know, it's not true. So that's why, yeah, I personally have benefited tremendously from my exploration of both approaches. And if I can put my first plug in for Pro Kanban,
please.
this is one of our big things about the ProKanban.org community that we started, is we don't believe that any one methodology or framework has a monopoly on good ideas, right? I mean, we should be open and curious to all of these things, because I think we have an opportunity to learn, you know, no matter where you look, even God forbid, safe, right? I mean, potentially,
right? You know. Well, we'll set aside that elephant for now. But
okay. Well, that'll be our three-part series, podcast series later.
That's a separate podcast of its own. How do you like to combine them then? Because I think some aspects do conflict, or does that vary by team or situation?
I think exactly what David was saying. I mean, Scrum does a great job of telling you about, you know, here's how you set up a sprint and here's how you tear down a sprint. But what happens in between those two points, it doesn't really give you all that much guidance. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's where flow really comes into play. I mean, yeah, you can do the best job in the world planning a sprint. But if you're not managing flow after you've done that, then, you know, all that work is waste. So that's the combination is, let's talk about the framework-y bits of Scrum, you know, to help us, you know, get our sprint established. But in terms of day-to-day, the principles of flow, like let's make sure we're visualizing our work. Let's make sure we're controlling work in progress. Let's make sure that we're, potentially monitoring these flow metrics for opportunities for improvement, those types of things. I mean, those are the elements I think that Scrum, rightfully or wrongfully, I'm not saying it's good or bad, but Scrum doesn't talk about,
right?
Now that I think about the experience I told you, the moment that we transitioned, when I wanted to make a transition fully to Kanban, I realized that there were some people in the team that were used to get blocked and be saved in the Scrum meetings, in the daily Scrum meetings. So that's a bias. So it is, I don't know if I can express this, sometimes the great benefit of having Agile is when you have great people doing great job and having resourceful people. And then when I was transitioning to Kanban with some projects, I realized who weren't the resourceful people. It is not that we weren't against helping people. It's that you realize, it seems that you like to get blocked. And you like to be saved every morning, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know. It was a way to expose things.
Absolutely. And that's, to me, that's where the Deming in me would come out and would say, what about how we've designed our system allowed that to happen, right? Because it's not necessarily that person's fault, potentially.
Right.
It could be.
Right.
It could
Good
be.
Point. It could be a systematic problem, right?
But there's something about how we've designed the way that we're working that has allowed that to happen. And you're right, that Kanban is essentially designed to expose those types of issues. But that and again, this gets back to the rigor thing. That's really all Kanban's going to do is expose these issues. It's going to be up to smart people like you, David, to come in and say, okay, well, all right, what are we going to do about it? Because Kanban's not going to tell you how to fix it. It doesn't know your context, right? It doesn't know what's going on. But at least give you that evidence that, hey, maybe something's not quite right here.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit more about flow and in the context of estimation and predictability in particular, I think, because that is, I think the estimation in general is the thing that we're all the worst at, perhaps, and that no one has consistently solved, right? I think Scrum does an interesting job with story points of trying to give you ways to tackle estimation, to tackle some of the inherent biases in estimation, but it's still ultimately a form of estimation. So I know when I'm still, when I talk to people about Scrum and Kanban and Agile in general, I still always start with, well, just don't estimate at all if you can get away with it. That's absolutely the best. And then when they say, but my boss says I have to estimate, then I talk to them about story points, right? But Kanban offers something different here. And so tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, there are four basic flow metrics in Kanban that we advise teams to pay attention to, and again, a deep dive into all four of these metrics is probably another episode,
right.
All on its own. But those four metrics, very quickly, those flow metrics are cycle time, work in progress, throughput, and work item aging. And I would say the biggest reason why we focus on those four things is because these are metrics that we can quantify, for lack of a better word, quantify the health and performance of our process in the language of our customers, right? Which I think is the most important part. Because here's the problem with the story point. I like to say this all the time, and Aaron and David, I'm sure you've had this problem. Go into a CFO and try to explain what a story point
right.
is, right? And if they get it, they'll probably slap you because they're like, that's the stupidest thing that I've ever heard of, right?
Convert that to man hours for me, right?
Exactly. It's like, why would you ever do something like this? That's stupid. And so that's why I think the flow metrics are so powerful because we're tracking these things in terms of the language of the customer. Like the customer understands elapsed time. How long does it take to get something done? The customer understands how many things of value are we getting done per unit of time. Those are things that tangible things that your customers really, really, really understand. And the beauty of that is now if we start speaking the language of our customer and we're starting to track these metrics in the language of our customer, now we can maybe get away from this whole estimating thing, which is, you know, like you said, Aaron, I'm just guessing, right? Who really knows, right? I'm just going to guess. And it's funny you said, you know, we're bad at estimating. Yes, we are all bad at estimating. Nobody knows how to predict the future. That's the whole point, right? But we can move a little bit more away from that estimation. Maybe a little bit more toward what I would call forecasting, which is where we use this data that we've collected to try and make some, you know, some projections about what might happen in the future. But it's not a deterministic estimate, you know, it's a probabilistic forecast. So I probably said a lot there without saying too much. But
it's a very interesting topic that you can dive deep on a lot, but I think it's, you know, hopefully we're at least whetting people's appetite to learn more about that, because I think it is fascinating how much you can do with those metrics in Kanban and the different scatter plots and the cumulative flow diagrams and everything, and how you can use those to create visual tools that not only look more impressive than a velocity burn down, perhaps in a scrum team, but also carry more weight behind them and do have a higher level of predictability. Yeah, I think that's very compelling. It's very interesting.
Yeah. It's like you said, having that evidence that will hopefully at least drive conversations about predictability. One of the ways I like to approach it is, as I mentioned before, I like to use these metrics to inform opportunities for improvement. And as long as you're following those lines of improvement, you essentially will get predictability for free. I know it seems kind of strange when I say that to people. But the big caveat there is predictability doesn't mean what you think it means. You know, you keep saying that word, predictability is, it's like I said, it's a probabilistic statement about the future. There's, you know, once we start to understand that there's no 100%, there's no such thing as a deterministic forecast, right? Nobody knows how to predict the future. Once we start understanding that predictability is a function of probability, that opens up so many doors, I think, in terms of how we approach process, how we approach improvement, how we approach, predictability.
So how do
and
go ahead? Dave.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So, sometimes I think we beat ourselves too much, because I mean, yeah, software development is black magic, and it's too hard, and it's true, but sometimes the message is that it's harder than anything else. And when you're building a business and when you're scaling a business, you realize that everything else is also black magic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is not true that you establish and you plan up until the tiny detail about, I don't know, a marketing strategy. I mean, it is not true that you get it exactly as you predicted it.
Yep.
Transforming that, so normalizing that expectation with software development as well, and say, hey, why are you so fixed in something that doesn't happen in the rest of your company?
It never happens that life turns out the way that we expect it to. I should say it rarely happens, right? I mean, you know, how many times have you gotten up in the morning and by the end of the day, you're like, wow, that's not how I expected this day to go.
Right.
I mean, it happens all the time, which is why I think, you know, why in Kanban, a lot of times you'll see this emphasis on, you know, on something called just in time. And that's is like the further we can get away from long-term planning, long-term estimating to, you know, just at the maybe you hear the least responsible moment. I kind of hate that terminology, but it kind of
last responsible moment.
Least. that's why I said least. So I mean more of a just in time, because from a flow perspective anyway, spending a whole bunch of time doing all this planning when we know, David, like you said, when we know it's probably going to be wrong anyway, is waste. You know, it's so, you know, wouldn't our efforts be better applied somewhere else and just embrace the fact that we don't know, you know, and kind of approach things that way. That's honestly probably the biggest thing that drew me to Kanban is, you know, is this idea of, hey, we acknowledge we don't know and we acknowledge we don't have to know, but yet we can still make progress.
Right.
Right. I think it's a matter of leadership to keep track of progress and with respect of the company priorities. I mean, that's more of like, I mean, again, for all the departments in the business, marketing, sales, IT, or I mean, the software development team is more a leadership concern. Is how I constantly keep track of the progress with respect of the priorities I have for this year. And it is very healthy to have from a business perspective, having a healthy, ambitious goal for this year, for the current year, is good. But having the chance to constantly revise that against the reality, mm-hmm. what the reality is telling you, and how you adjust, how you make that waste movement so you can pivot and you try to get as much as you can about the annual priority for this company. I mean, that's the real leadership challenge. That's it. And Kanban is just giving you an extra hand instead of just getting mad at Kanban or Agile because it doesn't give you all the predictability. They're giving you a lot of tools so you can adjust and use your leadership skill to get as much as you can of your company.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't mind, Aaron, if I can jump in, you know, on that. I totally agree. And this kind of gets back to one of the metrics that we were talking about before. You know, we were talking about cycle time. A lot of people think that the reason you track cycle time in Kanban, which cycle time, by the way, is defined as essentially how long does it take to get something done. That's a very, very crude definition, and it's not rigorous at all, but that's okay. We're gonna use that as our working definition. Most people think that the reason you track that is so that we can weaponize it. So we can take it and we can beat our teams over the head with, you're taking too long to get stuff done. And that's actually not the reason. The reason you track cycle time is to address all the problems to be that you were talking about is cycle time is really measuring that time to feedback. You know, we don't know whether something is valuable. We don't know if something was useful until we actually place it in the hands of our customers and our customers can tell us. You know, I have a friend of mine, his name is Prateek Singh, and he likes to say, you know, the key is finding out how wrong you are as quickly as possible. And that's so true. It is absolutely, and that's why you focus on reducing that cycle time is because we need that feedback from our customers to be able to set business priorities, like you were saying, David, you know, to be able to understand how our strategy may need to shift, to understand, you know, all of these things.
Dan, I think that's really interesting. I like where this is going. It makes me think about, maybe I'm thinking about some of these things wrong too. So asking kind of more general. So our listeners are tech leaders, engineering leaders in their companies, trying to grow their teams, being put under a lot of pressure from company leadership, from the CFOs, the CEOs to be able to deliver more value to quicker, higher quality, to get things done before the trade show, you know, all of that, right? So when the CFO comes to them and says, are you going to make this budget? Are you going to make this timeline? We let you implement Kanban. Now show me it works. How should that tech leader respond to them?
It's not sexy, and I'm not going to guarantee that this works, but in those types of situations, my preference is to always talk, I shouldn't say always, mostly. Remember, there's no such thing as always, to mostly talk in terms of risk management. So like I said, Kanban's not going to solve those problems for you, but it's going to help you manage the risk associated with, are we going to get done by the trade show? Are we going to get done by, you know, the close of the fiscal year? Are we going to get done by whatever? Kanban will help it inform some of those things. And so we need to understand, how much risk let's take the trade show, for example. How much risk is reasonable for us to get done or not? And what steps do we need to take to be able to mitigate or potentially even eliminate, you know, some of that risk? That's what Kanban's going to do for you. You know, it's going to say things like, oh, we only have a 55% chance of getting done by the trade show, you know, and your stakeholders might be, well, that's not good enough. All right, well, let's talk about what do we need to do to get it, say, from 55% to 85%. You know, what are some steps that we need to take? Recognizing that still 85% is not 100%, right? There's still a chance that, you know, that we're going to be wrong. So I don't know how directly that answers your question, Aaron, but my preference is always, you know, if you can frame the conversation in terms of risk, usually upper management understands risk.
Sure.
And you can have a meaningful conversation at that point.
Yeah, as David said, they're putting risk into their budget projections, hopefully, as well.
Yes.
So, you know, I think as he was noting, I think this was a good point. Too, that, you know, maybe because the CFO doesn't have the technical knowledge to understand the magic that we're doing in software development, then they're looking for a more concrete example to try and envelop something that they just don't understand, right? And so it's perhaps unfair because they're not applying that same standard to their own work, perhaps. But how, so we can't draw out a cumulative flow diagram in this, which in this format, but kind of paint a little bit of a picture, if you can, briefly, of how you're showing that, you know, we have a 55% probability of hitting those 15 tasks that you say are crucial for the trade show. How does a Kanban tool help you do that?
Yeah, I mean, when we start talking about probabilities, turning that flow data into probabilistic statements, you know, about the future, that's kind of where the rubber hits the road. There's one chart, and it might not necessarily be the chart that everybody's thinking about. There's one chart that'll really help you out with that, and there's even potentially even a better chart than this one. But the one chart I would start with is something called a cycle time scatter plot. And that's really where we're just going through. And every item that flows through our process, we're just tracking how long did that thing take. Because that is, your process is generating that data, and it is telling us, you know, in the system that we've designed, we talked about designing systems, in the system we've designed, this is going to be the distribution of how long it takes things to take. And from that distribution of data, we can start quantifying certain percentiles to say, oh, we have a 50% chance of, you know, this outcome happening. We have an 85% chance of, you know, of this outcome happening. The problem with cycle time scatter plot, if there is a problem with cycle time scatter plot, is cycle time, by definition, the item has to finish before you can calculate cycle time. You know, if the item hasn't finished, we don't know how long it takes, right? That's kind of definition. So if something is taking too long to complete, and if we're talking about risk management, one of the things we want to mitigate is items are taking way too long to complete. Well, like I said, waiting till it completes to find out that it took too long to complete, that's too late. So from a risk mitigation perspective, the hands down best chart that that I tell teams even to start with is something called a work item aging chart. You know, and the age of items is what you might expect. It's like, how long has it been since this item started? It hasn't finished yet, but how long has it been in progress? You know, because we expect our items to be in progress only 10 days, but this item has been in progress for 24 days. Well, why? You know, that's something that would never show up on a scatter plot. You'd have to go look somewhere else to see, you know, yeah, our scatter plot is telling us stuff should take 12 days or less, but on our aging chart, we've got a whole bunch of items that are over 20 days. Why? What's going on? So that's the type of insight I think that you get from monitoring these flow metrics that you would never get if all you were looking at was story points or velocity burn down or, you know, something like that.
Well, I like the aging term for that in particular, because certainly if as a tech leader I'm trying to convince the CFO of what's going on, what's going well or not, they're certainly familiar with an accounts receivable aging, and, you know, that concept is going to make immediate sense to them. You know, we're talking about not cash flow. We're talking about technical flow now.
Right. You got it.
Absolutely. So in that scatter plot, you know, you said the number 85% is the number I hear a lot in Kanban, and kind of what it's a common threshold, right, to use for the calculation of cycle time. Where does that number? What's the sort of motivation behind that number? Is it concrete or?
I would say it's probably more arbitrary than concrete. The idea behind the 85th percentile is you know, how do we get a number that gives us, you know, enough confidence in the forecast that we're making, but not too much confidence? Because when you, not to get too technical, but when you look at these scatter plots, the higher confidence you need, the much higher range that you're going to need to give, you know? And so at some point, you know, like a customer might come back to you and say, oh, I need to know with 100% certainty how long that's going to take. And even if you can explain to them, there's no such thing as 100%. The next thing they'll say is, okay, 99%. Right. Well, if you go look at your scatter plot, the 99th percentile might be something like 123 days, which is so big a range as to be meaningless. You know, so that's the idea behind is like, you know, how do we pick a percentile that gives us enough confidence in this forecast, but isn't too wide as to be absolutely useless? The word you used before, Aaron, actionable. You know, as to be actionable. That's why most people start with the 85th percentile, you know, because that's kind of a nice place to start. But to be completely honest with you, it's so context specific. You know, are we doing complete greenfield work versus brownfield work? Are we in a very, very highly regulated, you know, environment where maybe the CEO can get hauled off to jail if we do something wrong, you know, versus, oh, this is just some, you know, tech startup that we, you know, who knows if this thing's going to work or it's not, right? That context is going to play very, 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 very bigly into the determination of, you know, of what that right percentile is. So it is honestly more arbitrary than set in stone.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. And the key here then is you shouldn't be using 50%, right? Because if you just say, hey, on average, we get things done this fast, then half the time you're wrong, right? So we're trying to pick a number higher than that to live. There's some more valuable meaning.
Right. And, you know, and the thing is, you bring up an interesting point. For some prototyping, 50% might be okay. It might be okay to be wrong half the time, you know, if we're doing prototypes.
Sure.
Who knows?
Sure.
Right, you know? But in general, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's like, at least we want to know how much risk we're taking on. That's what I keep talking about, right? That's what that percentile tells you, is how much risk we're actually taking on, as opposed to, hey, we're going to get 16 story points done this sprint. All right, well, what are our chances of that happening? Well, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Dan, this has been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed it. David, do you have any other questions for Dan, before we start to wrap up here?
Well, just maybe one. I think, again, I mean, the field is divided. What I'm seeing is there is much. Oh, let me rephrase this. I've seen so much dogmatism, and camps, and all of that. So what's the message to give to someone that is in the Scrum camp? I mean, when I say a dogmatic Scrum person, is what's the message to give just in the for the sake of improvement? So, what are the things that we can use in talking with people about instead of focusing on camps and I am this person, I only do this. How to deal with that?
Good question. I mean, I would go back to kind of how I met Aaron, you know, our origin story, if I will. I mean, we were at the same organization and he was in there talking about Scrum and I was in there talking about Kanban, and I was listening to Aaron talking about Scrum and he was talking about all the same things that I was talking about. He was maybe using a little bit different language, but it was all the same stuff. And I'm like, you know, now Aaron, of course, isn't dogmatic at all. You know, he's one of these people you can actually sit down and have a rational conversation with. Don't tell him I said that. But I mean, I think that's it. It's one of the things I like to say is, you know, if let's say you have a team that's really, really good at doing Scrum and you've got another team that's really, really good at doing Kanban, whatever that means, right? You've got a team doing really good at Scrum, team really good at Kanban. If you were to bring a layperson in from outside that didn't understand Agile, that didn't understand Lean, that had no idea what Scrum was, that had no idea what Kanban was, if you had a layperson come in from outside, I'd be willing to bet that layperson would not be able to tell the difference between between that really good Scrum team and that really, really good Kanban team. Because you know, at the end of the day, I think, Aaron, you said this several times, it's really about delivery, you know, and how do we get better at delivery? And whether we call that Scrum, whether we call that Kanban, honestly, who cares?
Right? Let's just deliver some value.
I don't understand. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know the need for dogma. I mean, language is important for, you know, education and communication and things like that. But so I don't know, David, I don't know if that, I don't know that I have a good answer, you know?
I think that helps.
I
mean, be objective. That's it. I mean, if there is a rational value in doing something, just do it. It's there, right? I like that. I try something. I think that we're approaching the end of the episode. So it's. Can I try this? What are like the three takeaways of this conversation, guys? I don't know.
I'll say for me, I think the describing as Dan did, the cycle time being the measuring the time to feedback, as is really the real reason we're doing it, I think is a really important reminder to me personally that I wrote down that I'm going to take away from this.
Right. From my part, the predictability conversation was fantastic. The scatterplot, it is, Kanban enables you to have a conversation about the probability. I mean, how a risk assessment tool and it tells you how to deal with it. I love that. That was fantastic. Yeah. I like that very much.
I'm looking for all these opportunities. I hope I get invited back because I'd love to come back.
I'd like to more.
Yeah, exactly. I'd like to talk more about aging and how that can really unlock predictability in your process. I'd like to talk more about probabilistic forecasting. But I guess for me, the big takeaway, because I'm guessing a lot of your people maybe are doing Scrum. David, it was interesting. You said 10 years ago, Scrum was more popular than Kanban. I think that's still the case. I think it's still the case. I think Scrum is still the 800-pound gorilla out there. People associate Agile with Scrum. They think, hey, if you're doing Agile, you have to do Scrum. So for me, the big takeaway for people listening to this is it doesn't have to be an either or, and nor should it be, right? It shouldn't be Scrum versus Kanban. You know, let's talk about how we can put these things together. It's a false dichotomy. It's a false choice to think that you have to choose one or the other.
I totally agree with that. Definitely. Well, Dan, before we go, tell our listeners a little bit more about prokanban.org and a little bit more about where they can get in touch with you if they want to have a rational conversation or an irrational one with bourbon included.
I was going to say, it depends on how much whiskey we've been drinking, how rational that comes. Actually, I think I get more rational the more I drink. So Procon, we were talking a little bit before we started the recording. It was about 10 years ago. I felt like the Kanban community had kind of lost its way. And, you know, so some good people were leaving and there just wasn't the excitement and the enthusiasm, you know, from a lot of people in that community. And a few years ago, a bunch of us got together and said, you know, it shouldn't have to be like this. You know, it shouldn't have to be. So we got together to kind of recapture what the early days of the Kanban community was. But we wanted to do it this time. We wanted to do it right. We wanted to be safe, right? We wanted people to be come in and be able to express an opinion and not get bullied, right? We want people to come in and show up at a conference without, you know, fear of, you know, any type of harassment. We wanted to make it inclusive. We wanted our community to look like the people that we were trying to reach, you know? There were a whole bunch of those aspects that we wanted to bring into play, and that's really what prokanban.org, where it was born. So if anybody's interested, you can go to the website is prokanban.org. There's a link on the website. There's a link to our Slack community. I think it's open. I don't know how much we regulate that, but you're welcome to join our Slack community. Hit me up on LinkedIn if you want to find out more. You know, you can always, you know, ping me on LinkedIn to find out more. But honestly, the best place to start is to go to our website, check out some of the things that we're doing on the website, and join our Slack community and go from there. I think all of you will be happy and surprised at the community that we've developed.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Dan. We'll be sure to put links to all of that in the show notes for this episode as well. Thanks again so much for your time. Definitely would love to have you back on this sometime in the next few years.
I'm going to do it faster than that.
Hold me accountable this time. I'm not going to wait years again. Sometime very soon. We'd love to have you back and talk more in depth about some of these topics. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
No, the pleasure is all mine. Aaron, great to see you again. Great to talk to you again. David, really good to meet you. I'm glad we got the opportunity to connect here, and just can't wait till next time. So thanks so much for the opportunity.
In 5 years, again. Maybe. I'll be sooner.
We'll talk very soon. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Brought to you by AgilityFeet.com, experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally. For more information on today's episode and to submit your ideas for future guests, please visit scalingtechpod.com.